Boston fans, this is what you've been waiting for.
Thomas, in the paint, tries to spin it up and down.
It's Celtics coverage on CLNSradio.com.
Into Crowder, takes it.
So what are you waiting for? Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll-free, 347-215-7771.
Put out for you! Marcus Smart at the buzzer!
And welcome to the CLNS Radio Celtics post-game show for the Boston Celtics versus Orlando Magic. Pretty insane game tonight. My name is Jeff Thomas. I'll be your host tonight. I'll be alongside Warren Shaw in just a minute. But I want to remind everyone that you can follow CLNS Radio on Twitter at CLNS Radio. Facebook, join the conversation at www.facebook.com/CLNSfans. And make sure you check out all of that there. You can listen to this show and many other shows, including Red Sox Beat, Celtics Beat, Patriots Beat, Bruins Beat, all those shows on the CLNS Radio free mobile podcast app for iOS and Android. Simply search CLNS Radio in your app marketplace. The Boston Celtics lose to the Orlando Magic 119-114 tonight. Breaks the Celtics' five-game winning streak, and it also breaks the Magic's eight-game losing streak. They had lost 12 out of 13 coming into the game. So two teams going in opposite directions. They'd already played each other 2 days ago on Friday, where the Celtics won easily, 113-94. And the Magic came back tonight, and the Magic are now 2-1 against the Celtics. Celtics nearly made an incredible comeback at the end, led by Marcus Smart, but they didn't quite do it. You can call into this show at 347-215-7771. We'll get to some calls a little bit later, the Audible toll-free call line. So make sure you hit us up there, and we'll be breaking this game down over the next 45 minutes to an hour here. And I'm going to bring in my co-host now, Warren Shaw. Warren, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, brother. How you doing, man?
Good. Would have been better with the win, but hey, at least they made it pretty exciting there at the end in the little comeback.
Yeah, that was, you know, it was exciting and interesting, and you know, a lot of fouls and shooting those threes. I think I'm just seeing something now. They attempted a franchise record 46 three-pointers tonight. It's a very interesting situation, I think, with this team. And my thoughts on it, number one, as you said, you know, kind of the outset there, two teams heading in opposite directions. You can say Orlando was probably due. And the fact of, you know, fact remains that I don't know what the record is NBA-wise overall, but I'd venture to guess that not too many teams win both games of a home-and-home series. So, and especially with the way Boston won on Friday night, Orlando just seemed poised and ready to kind of, you know, try to make some sort of statement tonight. And they changed their lineup and rotation around and got the W.
Yeah, it's so hard to win two games in a row against the same team, especially when the second one's on the road. Although the Celtics are one of the better road teams in the league and have been for about the last year here. But it's even at that, it's still hard to beat a team like that. And the Celtics were in control for the first half. I mean, they had a 32-24 lead after one. They had a 54-47 lead at halftime, but the Magic scored 72 points in the second half, and they really played well in the second half. And clutch performances from three guys in particular, Mario Hezonja, Evan Fournier, and Aaron Gordon. Fournier had 24 points to lead the team. He was 4-for-5 from deep, made 8 free throws. Gordon had 19 points, 14 rebounds, 5 assists, and 2 blocks, one of the best games of his young career. And Hezonja is a rookie, and hasn't played a whole lot, averages 4.5 points per game. He hit 3 threes also, 7-for-13 from the field. He had 17 points. So a lot of big performers. So it makes sense. They just wanted it. They needed to win badly. They ramped up the intensity in the second half and just squeaked it out barely.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head there. I mean, what are you going to do when two guys off of a team, you know, that's lost 8 in a straight, played the best games of their NBA careers, whether that, you know, that be first year players or second year players. I mean, they literally played the best games of their lives. And Hezonja hit 1-3, you know, I think in the second half, or you know, against Smart, with defending him, just kind of fading away, just throwing it up there,
Fournier hit what would have been the equivalent of a turnaround three. I think he hit another three with the shot clock winding down. I mean, they just got, you know, they got clutch performances for some guys tonight that, you know, it just didn't seem like Boston was going to be able to stop for whatever reason. And there was some over-rotation on the defense at times here and there, and maybe even a lack of respect for even Hezonja, who again, is still a rookie. But those guys really did produce. And, again, you have to credit Scott Skiles for, you know, at this point, trying anything, any and everything, you know, changing that lineup around and getting those guys out there and giving them minutes where they stayed hot.
But, boy, don't take a lesson from this Magic team and how to close out a game, right? They missed 14 free throws tonight, right. Most of those in the fourth quarter. This is not the last 2 minutes of a game to watch if you're trying to learn how to complete a game and finish a team off.
No, absolutely not. And again, they gave Boston every opportunity and chance to kind of get back into this thing. But like I said, it just really seemed like, you know, not tired legs or whatever like that. It just seemed like it was still going to be their night regardless. And even with Marcus Smart hitting that ridiculous three, I mean, getting fouled in that 4-point play, I think to cut the lead to three once again, you know, it was kind of shades of the Indiana game a couple of weeks ago, you know, when they were at home and they, you know, cut that lead down and ended up winning that game. I was like, wow, is this really going to happen? But, you know, it just wasn't enough tonight. And again, it's still, you know, one of those good try, good effort type of things. But again, Orlando just had a little bit more oomph, had a little bit more energy tonight. I'm not looking at the stats right now, but just from the eye test, I know Orlando had it seemed like a zillion second chance points. They were just had so much energy, especially in the second half, killing Boston on the glass, if you will, and getting a lot of put back baskets after their initial misses.
Yeah, they out-rebounded the Celtics 50-41. The Celtics actually had one more offensive rebound in the game, but I think the Magic had more in later parts of the game, mostly the fourth quarter. They got, like you said, they got a lot of opportunities with just the hustle plays, getting to the ball faster. I don't want to use this excuse for why the Celtics kind of fell apart in the second half, but the Celtics have played a lot of games in this month and a lot recently, like multiple back-to-backs, 4 out of 6 games. You know, yeah. They've played a lot of games.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that does start to wear on a team. But, you know, again, I don't want to be the pessimistic Celtics fan here in this situation, but I think this is the difference between, you know, an elite team and a very good team. An elite team would have probably been able to go ahead and take this Orlando Magic team out 2 games in a row in the home and home, even going on the road. And then you just saw here in a situation where Orlando changed their rotation. You know, they had all these bench guys playing, I think, at one point in the second quarter, and then they changed the rotation again in the third quarter and left Hezonja out there, and Fournier came in and started hitting those shots. And Boston didn't really seem to have the answers for that and didn't seem prepared for some of those things that were going on. But again, you have to credit Orlando because they made some really, really tough shots and got the W. But to me, this is kind of where I see, you know, why I see Boston is they're a good team, but they're not nearly as elite as many people want to try to give them that credit for just yet.
Yeah, they're definitely getting there. I do want to get to that in a minute. I do want to do some Celtics talk here, but I want to finish up, not necessarily finish up, but at least go a little further with the Magic here since we can talk about the Celtics all day, any day. I thought at the beginning of the season that the Magic were going to be a good team. They had some solid young players, really like Tobias Harris and Victor Oladipo. Elfrid Payton's definitely has a future. And then you see all these guys tonight with Gordon, Fournier, and Hezonja, who are clearly good players and, you know, played out of their minds tonight. But they obviously have the talent because they wouldn't be able to do it otherwise. To play this well otherwise. Mm-hmm. So having them start off the season pretty well and then over the last couple of weeks, terrible, losing by a ton, 8 in a row before tonight, 12 out of 13 they lost in a row, and they just completely fell out of the playoff chase and everything over the last 3 weeks or so. So where do you see this team kind of – what do you see them doing the rest of the year and then maybe in the future? Because it seems like they have a good core.
No, you're right. They have an excellent young core there. To me, I've been debating this and at the beginning of the year, you know, which team would I rather have in terms of having the youth and talent and between Minnesota and Orlando. I think both teams have a lot of great pieces, and the consensus is Orlando simply because they're in the Eastern Conference, which is supposed to be the easier of the two conferences. But I think this is a team that maybe Skiles realizes he needs to invest a little bit more on the development of these young guys. Gordon is a guy who I think basically lost what would have been his starting position at the beginning of the year to Evan Fournier, who played very well to begin the season. But I think Gordon had, I think, a jaw injury or whatever it was, but played amazing basketball in the summer league, and everyone said he looked like a new player, and he really did. But that kind of changed the rotation up some. Then there were some issues with Oladipo, and then he got injured, and then he was coming off the bench. Then he came back. Then Peyton got injured, and then Peyton was coming off the bench. And now they have Peyton and Oladipo back in the starting lineup, and now they brought Gordon into the starting lineup, moving Fournier to the bench. So I guess this is what, you know, losing, what do you say, 12 or 13 games will definitely do. It forces you to take a hard look at your rotations and things that you want to do. But I think right now Skiles has to realize that he's got to get these young guys out there and get them the minutes. And whether or not it translates to them competing for a playoff position this year, I think it really is about developing everybody. And you see a guy like Azonia, who was, I think, the number 5 pick, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe 4. He's somebody who's going to have to get some minutes going forward as well. And I really do feel like this Orlando Magic team has a bright future. I can't say necessarily playoffs this year, but definitely they can definitely make a push towards that. And definitely you want to see that overall improvement from their youth.
Yeah, they were definitely in line for a potential playoff berth whenever all the teams were kind of even, and they were hanging right around that. But now they've fallen off a little bit to the lower parts. They're at 21-25 right now, which isn't bad, but obviously they were a lot better before. Yeah, Hazonia was the number 5 pick this year, so they definitely have some good pieces. They need to figure out who to play at what time. Like you said, a lot of guys switching from starting to the bench, and who plays when and where. So they have to figure that out. I think they're definitely very young and inexperienced, and you can see that sometimes. For example, on Friday when the Celtics played them, then also they just totally lost focus and energy and just looked like they had won no part of the basketball court. Once the Celtics stretched the lead from 7-25, it's just like in that span of time they were just like not even like on the court, which is obviously very different from tonight. So it just seems like a lot of inconsistency from game to game. That's what happens when you are a young team and you lose a bunch of games in a row.
Right. And again, you have a traditional disciplinarian in Scott Skiles, you know, as your head coach. I was very, not to say hesitant, but I questioned the hiring of Skiles for this team because I was like, well, this isn't quite a rebuilding situation, but they're not where he's used to being in terms of level of development, not necessarily even talent, but even over their overall development. And I guess he and their general manager, Rob Hennigan, had to have that conversation and kind of get to some sort of understanding of where this team was going to be and how they were going to play and defensive principles. And when they were playing really well to begin the year, they were one of the top teams in defensive rating. I think that has since fallen off. But their offense was clicking as well. And I was calling it, you know, an honor show, the baseline, calling it the new school meets the old school, where he was allowing them to run up and down offensively, but he wasn't able to instill that some of those defensive principles. Somewhere along the way, that kind of, you know, went away, and you know, you see them in the stretch that they're in now. But again, a great win for them tonight, something that they can potentially build off, you know, especially in the Eastern Conference. And I think those young guys really do have a bright future.
Yeah, definitely. Before we move to the Celtics, some stats for the Magic tonight. They shot 44 for 82, 53.7%, very solid. 10 for 24 from downtown, 41%, also very good. Free throws, not so much, as I said earlier, 21 for 35, 60%, not good, but they'll have to work on that. Rebounds, 50 to 41 over the Celtics. Assists, 27 to 17 in favor of the Magic. Magic did a 15 turnovers, 7 steals, and 6 blocks. So overall, pretty good stat line for them. Somebody else to note, Nikola Vucevic, their center, had 16 points, 13 rebounds, and 7 assists, 3 blocks. Didn't shoot well, 6 for 17. Didn't shoot free throws well, 4 for 8, but overall his numbers were good. I just want to touch on him before we switch over to the Celtics. They were saying during the game that he averages less than 2 free throws attempted per game. Now he's a big guy who's in there getting, you know, he got 13 rebounds tonight. He averages 9 rebounds per game for the season. How the heck is a guy who's always inside getting putbacks, getting 9 rebounds a game, not shooting more than 2 free throws a game?
And that's a testament to, I guess, you know, where he is as a player, and maybe even some of the respect he gets from the referees. I mean, I've seen the Magic some. I have to say I've seen them a lot, but I've seen them some. And he has fallen a little bit in love with the mid-range jumper. You know, I think most of his rebounds traditionally are on the defense side of the basketball, where he does a good job of boxing out and getting positioning. But tonight, I think he realizes that they have the advantage against the Celtics, especially with like the size and strength and physicality, especially when Ramir was out. I think I even tweeted out, his eyes have lit up the last two times Olynyk has been on him, and he's going to the basket and going to the basket hard. And Olynyk, who we all know is very, very foul prone, just wasn't really able to do anything with the big body of Vucevic. I remember specifically Vuce hitting like some crazy left-handed sweeping hook off the glass you know, towards the center of the basket. But that just could show you how aggressive he felt like he felt he needed to be when Olynyk was on him. But again, he's a guy who definitely should be getting to the line more, but traditionally he's playing a lot of pick and pop as opposed to pick and roll in Orlando's offense. But that's something you want to see that young guy get better at and improve his overall free throw percentage.
Yeah, definitely. It's as they said that he'd hardly taken any in the game, and then as they said that he finished the game 4 for 8. So maybe they don't want him shooting free throws if he's going to be doing that. He was 4 for 8. Aaron Gordon was 3 for 9, and Fournier was 8 for 11, which isn't terrible, but a couple of misses. So Vucevic and Gordon really blew that. Let's move over to the Celtics side of the ball now. They'd won 5 in a row before this game. They're looking for their first 6-game winning streak, I believe, of the whole Brad Stevens era. They were over 6 games over 500 at the start of the night for the first time in the Brad Stevens era. So breaking a lot of Brad Stevens marks here, unfortunately, with the loss tonight. But they've been playing very well. And really something I noticed, take away this game, of course, since the Celtics lost, but what they're doing now is, you know, we were talking about, you were saying earlier, if they were an elite team, they would have put the Magic away tonight, which I totally agree with. But what I have been noticing is that earlier in the year, they weren't beating the bad teams. Later in the year now, the last several games, they've been beating the teams that they should be beating, which is a sign of a team that's getting better, because you're not going to be a good team if you can't beat the bad teams. So the first step is doing that. And until tonight, obviously, you can kind of throw this one away, because second game in a row against the team, but they've been beating the bad teams, which I think is definitely a good sign.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great point. You know, I think there was I was watching an earlier game today, and I think someone was talking about the Toronto Raptors, and they're like, well, a lot of their wins came against bad teams. I was like, well, I mean, that's what you're supposed to do. So you don't take anything away from teams that stack up their wins and stack up their schedule a little bit there. Otherwise, the alternative is much worse than that. I mean, you're talking about a whole different situation. So Boston is doing what they needed to do, especially in the last few weeks, if you will, and getting that understanding. They're getting a little bit better at closing out games as well, too, which was a huge problem to start the season. And it just kind of makes you wonder, like, damn, you know, where could this team really be had they had some of this mantra and even effort and even just overall understanding of who they were as a team to begin the year, because they could definitely have at least 4 or 5 more wins on the season. We'd be talking about a team that's challenging Toronto in the Atlantic Division for really second place team in the conference right now. But again, it is what it is, and they do have to go through that growing phase. And like you said and alluded to, they definitely are making strides that are better for them in general. And that's what you want to see. You know, it always needs to be about progression. It always needs to be about getting better. I think Stevens is doing a much better job with rotations and understanding, and roles are being defined, and they know who they are as a team. They're going to push the pace. They're going to force turnovers. They're going to play tough, relentless defense, and they are unfortunately going to shoot a lot of threes as a result of it as well. But this team definitely is heading in the right direction, and like you said, this is a hiccup of a game right now in a tough back-to-back game, especially going on the road.
Yeah, no, they're definitely improving. It's hilarious that you can be 5 games over 500 and be the 4th seed in the conference. If they won tonight, they would have been sole possession of 3rd place, which is incredible. But as it stands with the loss, wow, they stay in 4th place, which is still obviously really good. And they're only 5 games over 500. So it goes to show you, if they, you know, the next couple of weeks, if they could win, you know, 80, 85% of their games, then and stick maybe, you know, 8 or 9 games over 500, then we're talking about you can stay there. And there's no pressure. If you lose like 4 in a row, you're going to be under 500 again, like was the case for most of the season so far. So they can really just get enough over 500 to feel comfortable. Then they're going to be one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference and not have that worry that if you just go on a bad skid, you're going to be back down to like the 8th, 9th, 10th spot in the conference again, which is definitely a good thing. And I think they're headed that way.
Yeah, and we definitely hope so, because I think you always want to see marked improvement, and as I was saying a little bit earlier, and if this is a wide open year in the Eastern Conference for whatever reason, and they have a legitimate chance to try to get home court advantage, not just make the playoffs, but really get home court advantage. I mean, I'll be the first one to tell you, I said the East in general I thought was better, and I didn't know how much better the Celtics could be themselves. So I predicted them to be roughly at 42-40, and I was like, maybe that gets them to 7th seed again. I can't see them getting any higher than that. But now hope springs eternal. They seem to be a little bit better than I would have hoped that even at this point in the season. And now you start to wonder, like, okay, well, really, where can this team go? Where can they finish? And, You know, we're not going to get into, I guess, all of the rumors and rumblings of what Ainge may or may not do, you know, before the trade deadline. But there's a legitimate chance for this team to be a heavy seed in the Eastern Conference, and the home court advantage is not out of the question.
Yeah, and once you're talking about that, like, yeah, we're not one of the best teams in the league, obviously, yet at this point. You're not as good as Cleveland. You're not as good as Toronto at this point. And obviously, you're not as good as the West teams like the Spurs, Warriors, Thunder, teams like that. But just to see the team kind of come together, and if they can put together a nice season, get 45, 46, 47 wins with this current team, like say they don't do any trades, they can, if they do that with this team, then you're really growing as a team and each year getting better and better and seeing what you have and the guys that you currently have. And to be able to do that and still be that good, obviously, is a good sign for the future. And it's happening pretty fast here. I mean, people are impatient, but you gotta wait for this stuff, because it's not, you don't just become a great basketball team overnight with young players. It doesn't happen. And they're doing it faster than they could be. So I like where it's going at this point. Yeah, who knows what they'll do with the trade deadline. I'm not a huge fan of speculating on that stuff, because most of the time nothing ever happens anyway that people talk about. So I just like to stay away from that. But I think that they're definitely going in the right direction. Getting home court in the playoffs would be awesome. Although the Celtics are a really good road team too, so maybe they do well in both. But yeah, obviously you want home court in the playoffs, because that's what everyone wants. You want to have your home crowd at the beginning of the series and get an early lead and all that.
Absolutely. I really feel like, you know, I'm probably going to be in the majority in this, you know, and again, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but I would really like to see them stand pat, because I think that just says more about them. If they aren't able to get to kind of what you're saying in that 45 win range and maybe get home court advantage, I think that just says more about Stevens and where this team is going. And I think that helps you not only obviously keep your draft picks and see what that may be able to yield. I would hate to see them put on that ahead of time, and especially with how bad Brooklyn's been playing lately. But then you got to think about this realistically. There's a chance that they could potentially get a draft pick and lure a free agency if this team shows that marked improvement and keeps the assets that it currently has. Like, you could really get a 2-for-1 situation here if you play your cards right, and that's what I'm hopeful for Boston. Just kind of stick this thing out. We're not, for most intents and purposes, we're not going to get a franchise-changing player, you know, if anything happens in the trade deadline. And if you're not making a title run, per se, then there's no reason to do anything drastic. Continue with the improvement that you have, and then see what you can do in the draft and the free agency in the summer.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Once again, everyone, you're listening to the CLNS Radio Celtics post-game show. I'm Jess Thomas. You can find me on Twitter at @CLNS_JessSayin. And we got Warren Shaw here. You can find him on Twitter at @ShawSportsNBA. So make sure you check both of us out. Check out CLNS Radio, like I said earlier, at CLNS Radio. And you guys can call in the Audible toll-free call line at 347-215-7771. We'll go to the call line in about 10 minutes or so. We'll keep breaking down this 119-114 Celtics loss. It's weird to say, because they've been winning a lot recently, so it's strange to talk about a loss. But breaking down some more of the Celtics play tonight, let's talk about the three-pointers, because as you said earlier, 46 threes, franchise record for the Celtics, attempted, which is insane. They were 16 for 46, 34%. Although, the interesting thing about it is that Boston started 7 for 12 in the first quarter from three, which is 58%. Marcus Smart and Isaiah Thomas were both 3 for 4 in the first quarter. Smart hit three in a row, essentially, in the last minute and a half of the first quarter, and they were looking great, 7 for 12. It was the most threes made by the Celtics in the first quarter since 2003. So everything was great. Then over the next three quarters, they were 9 for 34, which sent their percentage way down and made it really not that good at 16 for 46, with the most they've attempted as a franchise. Avery Bradley was 3 for 12. Jay Crowder was 1 for 6. Kelly Olynyk was 0 for 5. So do you think that they just got too cocky with how well they shot in the beginning and things just kind of evened out? Like, what's the reason for 46 threes?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was that. And then there was some parts where they were, I think, trying to get it all back once they saw Orlando making that run. But I do feel like they just got really confident in that. And, you know, Crowder took a couple, and I was like, those were ill-advised. You know, AB took a couple that I thought were ill-advised. And, you know, Olynyk, I always want him to shoot the three because I don't think he took any that he shouldn't have taken tonight. But he just, those just didn't go down for him. And again, that's just, that's unfortunate. But I feel like at times Stevens needs to read the game and bring those guys in and say, listen, you know what? People know at this point that they are going to shoot the three regardless of where they are. Because I think last time I checked, they were 24th to 25th. I'm thinking 3-point percentage. But nevertheless, even though if you're going to fire them, well, this is a perfect opportunity now to ball fake, step in, or swing the ball and try to get a layup or try to get somebody cut into the basket. They, like you said, man, they just really fell in love with that shot tonight. And I was just like, oh, my God, another one. And even the ones that went in, you know, after the first quarter, I still didn't think most of them were really good shots. So it was frustrating to watch. But I think this has been kind of the mantra for the entire season. They've been shooting a lot of threes. And Stevens is encouraging it because of the pace and the way they play. And I get it, but I just feel like you need to be smarter in the shot selection, especially when you're not shooting at a high percentage.
Yeah, it's tough to know because, like you said, they are one of the worst three shooting teams. I think earlier in the year, I calculated it up after the first like two and a half weeks of the season where they were shooting like upper 20s percent. It was terrible. They've gotten better since, no mm-hmm. question about it. But overall, it's tough to know because. Like tonight, for example, Olynyk 0 for 5, Crowder 1 for 6. Well, they're two of the better three shooters on the team. So was it really as bad as it seemed? I think they shouldn't have taken so many because you obviously want to go to the basket. And then once the Magic started going on their, you know, 16-2 run in the third quarter, 20-5 run in the fourth quarter, you want to stop that momentum. And you do that by driving the basket. And that's they just didn't do that. So I can see both sides. Like they took too many. Because they needed to go to the basket, but also the guys who are missing them were guys who usually make them. So I can kind of see both sides of how it went tonight.
Right.
So it's
What are you gonna do? I mean, right. Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. I mean, it is, but I mean, Olynyk, I guess he didn't heave them. He wasn't chucking per se, but like, you know, AB's 3 of 12, and there's just times where I'm like, all right. I mean, again, he's a very good shooter. He's obviously worked on that part of his game and has become a lot better than I even have given him credit for it, but I just feel like there's some opportunities there where, especially if people are rushing out at him, he could have ball faked. He forced a couple of himself right now tonight, and like I said, that's just frustrating because I feel like, okay, that's also part of their maturation process in terms of reading the game and understanding game flow. All right, we don't have this shot going for us right now. What else can we do now to try to be effective offensively?
Right. Yeah, no, I totally agree. He definitely forced them going 3 for 12, but. And you'll take that because you want him shooting the ball most of the time. So we'll see how he bounces back in the coming games. Let's talk a little Marcus Smart because Smart tonight had it's funny that we're mentioning this all the way, almost a half hour into the show, but Smart had a career high, tied a career high and a season high with 26 points tonight, 8 for 16 shooting, 5 for 9 from three. But I want to focus on is the 3-point shooting because I don't know if you're aware of this, but when they had the snow day, and had to reschedule the Philadelphia game, Smart used that opportunity to spend all day in the gym working on his 3-point shot because at that point he was shooting like 20-something percent. It was absolutely terrible from three. Mm-hmm. He worked on that in that game, and ever since he's been shooting the lights out of the ball, and he was 5 for 9 tonight, 3 for 5 in the last game. He made 2 against Washington, 2 for 5. He made 3 for 6 against Philadelphia, which was right after that snow day. So he's been shooting the lights out of his 3-pointers since he worked on it. So that's what you got to love about a guy like him is that he wants results. He goes and works at it and he gets instant results. And that's clearly what's happening. Cause if you can have him be a threat like this, he's been playing great offense in addition to his great defense. Definitely a great sign.
Now, I agree with that. He's one of the hardest workers on the team by all accounts. And to see that he is progressing along, you know, especially with his lofty draft status and some people wondering if Boston had made a mistake at some point with him, but I definitely don't think so. And because he plays both sides of the basketball and his offense is coming along and maturing so well, it's really nice to see that he is developing and he is so tough. And even outside of 3-point shooting, he's also a guy who we've seen along with Evan Turner, in that second lineup, they're going down there and they're posting up at times too and giving the Celtics some offense that they can get, you know, outside of the 3-point shot. So the fact that his three is now falling and making him a quote-unquote inside-outside threat, I think that's great news. Obviously, still the next phase of his game is ball handling and finishing at the rim a little bit better. But overall, like I said, you can't knock what Marcus Smart has done for the Celtics team, especially in the short amount of time.
Right, and he's improved that much, also having to work around the injuries he's had. And I know people have been worried about him being injury-prone, me included, but the fact that he's still made these strides, he definitely needs to work on the basket, but he is better at it than he was last year, even at that. So I think the way that he has improved with how little time he's able to do it because of his injuries, that makes it even more impressive than it already is.
Yeah, can't knock his hustle at all, you know, for real. And I just want to see his continued growth in that, see the playmaking come along as well too. Again, we're not going to get it all in one shot. It's not going to all happen and come together this year. But the fact that he's even stayed steadfast and hasn't complained, you know, even after being injured and not being inserted back in the starting lineup, understand that the team had a certain flow going on, and he's just marketed himself and put himself in a position to be successful. And he's still getting, you know, roughly what would be the equivalent of starters minutes, you know, almost 30 minutes, and I think 28 minutes this evening. And he is down there at the end of games as well too. So he's playing a vital role for this team and doing a great job coming for them off the bench. So I'm just really glad to see that, because I was worried a little bit about his attitude when they drafted him and, you know, kind of what type of player was he going to be. But he's proven to be nothing but a hard worker and team-first guy, and really wants to be successful as a Boston.
Yep, he's a guy who wants to go out there, and he wants to get it, which you got to respect. So great night for him tonight, 26 points. Isaiah Thomas had 23 points, and Avery Bradley had 22. So those are the three high scorers. Only three in double figures, a lot of 8 and 9 points tonight. But they were the ringleaders definitely tonight. Celtics shot 42% from the field. Like we said, 16 for 46, 35% from three. Good free throws, 20 for 25. But kind of got outstatted by the Magic and the rest of the category. So definitely some stuff to work on, but just a game that you kind of got to, you know, throw away, realize that it's back-to-back with the same team, and just move on from that. So we'll see how they bounce back. We're going to head over to the Audible call lines. Once again, the toll-free number, as I've said a couple times for the show and future shows, is 347-215-7771. And Audible.com is a leading provider of audiobooks with more than 180,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, periodicals, and obviously sports. Audiobooks are a great way to listen when you're driving, running errands, in the gym, or simply at home relaxing. For audience members of this show, Audible is offering a free 30-day trial. You just go to audiblepodcast.com/Celtics, browse the programs, download title free, and start listening. It's that easy. One audiobook you should definitely consider is frequent CLNS radio guest and sports beat legend Bob Ryan. We all know him. His book, Scribe. You get a free 30-day trial at audiblepodcast.com/Celtics. Download Scribe, narrated by Bob himself, and you can just head over there and start your free trial today. So we're going to head over to the Audible call lines. I believe we got our buddy Nick Sacento over here on the line. Nick, how you doing?
How's it going?
Yeah, it would have been better if they got a win, but what are you going to do, right?
Well, I mean, the way I'm listening to it, I'm listening to the way you guys describe the game, it sounds like the Celtics just had a bad night, and they were, you know, they scratched back, you know, from behind to almost make a game out of it in Orlando. But the game that I was watching, it seemed like the Celtics had controlled the game for, you know, the greater part of probably about, you know, 2.5 quarters. And then as soon as Orlando started, you know, making that, you know, that push in the third quarter, which seems to be the Celtics' worst quarter. I don't know why they can't come out of halftime, you know, and either hold momentum or, you know, gain momentum when they're behind. But it seems like when the Magic started, you know, making that push, the Celtics just reverted back to that, you know, well, I'm just going to take a 3-point shot and I'm just going to stop the run with a 3-point. And they, you know, like you said, it's a franchise record, 46 threes. It's just, you know, insanity. At some point, you have to have, you know, you have to take the leash off somebody. Let somebody just, you know, go to the paint. I mean, Evan Turner, a player who can easily, you know, get to the paint. And I don't know if it's him or if it's, you know, Coach Stevens who says, you know, Evan, I don't want you to score tonight. But I mean, there are players other than Isaiah Thomas who can get to the paint that just don't. And I don't understand. You know, I live down here in Florida, so I get the the Fox Sport Florida Orlando broadcast, and you know, they were mentioning the typical cliche about, you know, scoring, you know, well the three pointer, that it can be fool's gold. And I mean, you just can't assume that because you're shooting, you know, 50% from three in the first quarter and you're shooting a good, you know, first half, that's going to continue to happen. And that when adversity hits, you know, it seems too often with this team that when adversity hits, they just revert back to, I'm just going to start, you know, heaving these threes. And considering the fact that they're one of the league's worst three-point, you know, shooting teams, that just shouldn't even be an option. It's just, I mean, there just needs to be something better there. I don't think I saw enough adjustment from Stevens. I don't think I saw anything happening there to, you know, even, I mean, to counteract what the Magic were doing. The Celtics had the game under control for 2.5 quarters. They had the lead for more than 2.5 quarters. It wasn't a case of having to come back from an overly, overly, you know, motivated Orlando Magic team. Orlando Magic were getting their asses kicked from the beginning. We just kind of let our foot off the gas and, you know, didn't come out of the halftime playing to our strengths. And I think, you know, you got to put a lot of that on Coach Stevens. And I mean, as motivated as the Magic may have been, as good as the Celtics are, you know, what have you, you just can't let that happen. And, you know, and I know you probably have other callers, other things to talk about running out of time. As far as the trading and stuff, I don't see how we can stand pat. We have, I think, more than a dozen draft picks, and, you know, the common, you know, saying about draft picks is they're always worth more before they become, you know, an actual player. Draft picks are always worth more when they're still picks, before they're actually chosen. And, you know, the worst thing that I think could possibly happen is that we sit here and don't make any trades, and we have Danny Ainge drafting, you know, R.J. Hunter and James Young and Terry Rozier and Marcus Thornton and Jordan Mickey all over again. I mean, this team, if it's going to make a move, it doesn't even really need, like, we don't need a franchise player. We don't need, like, a super-duper franchise player. I like some of the things I've been hearing about trying to get Horford from Atlanta. I think Horford would be a perfect fit, and he's not, you know, an epic, you know, superstar, but he's a player that would fit well and fill a need for this team. I don't think that this team, not just because this team needs another player, another consistent player to help us get over the hump, which we clearly do, but I think that if we stand pat and keep all these picks and let Danny Ainge, you know, go make these picks, sure, he did well with Marcus Smart, that was a good pick. Sure, the Kelly Olynyk pick, which is actually a trade, was a good pick. But, I mean, if we're not if these picks aren't, you know, something that's in the lottery or something, you know, up there in the top, you know, 6-13, like, you know, Kelly Olynyk and Marcus Smart were, and we're drafting somewhere down, you know, the 15th, 16th, 20th picks, you know, with all these picks, we're going to have a team full of, you know, a bunch of young players that we as yet have yet to be proven that Brad Stevens can actually develop a player from draft to superstar, from draft to you know consistent contributing rotation player. He's improved a lot of the players that are on the roster. He's definitely improved Kelly Olynyk's play. I think he's definitely improved Isaiah Thomas, who is just waiting to, you know, break out anyway. He's revitalized Evan Turner's career into what Evan Turner is now, kind of like a Swiss Army knife. But can Brad Stevens, as a coach of a mid-major, you know, college, you know, team before this, his only experience being that, can he take players from the draft and turn them into consistently, you know, productive rotation, if not, you know, star caliber players? And, you know, he hasn't had enough time to do it, but can he do it? And I don't know if I want to gamble on that, and I don't know if I want to gamble on Ainge's, you know, draft picks. We have to make some moves, if for the least, to get rid of some of these excess picks, because if we have to draft them like we did this past draft, it's gonna be a problem. And then getting more picks on top of that, like we need to, you know, trade David Lee for a couple of more second round picks. It's just at some point too many picks. We got to start getting players, and we got to start getting players that are going to contribute, whether rotation players or impact players. And that's basically about all I got. Tonight was a disappointment. I hate living near Orlando. I live in Tampa. I hate living near Orlando with these halftime Magic fans and sitting here to listen to them every time I wear my Celtics shirt, every time they squeeze out a win, a lucky win like this one, where we beat them down for nearly three quarters, and then they come back and, you know, and kill us. Not because they're so much better than we are, because Evan Fournier is not a great player, and whatever that other guy's name is, Hezonja, is not a great player, but we just took our foot off the gas and then just relied on, you know, chucking threes 46 threes. It's absolutely horrifying, but I think that we can bounce back. I still think the team, you know, because the East is so cluttered, the team is still, you know, meritorious of a top four, you know, spot. But that's only because, you know, there's so much congestion in the East that, you know, the Celtics have proven to be just slightly a little bit better. That top five, you know, consistent top four, three, four, five defensive ranking in the league separates them, I think, from some of the other teams. But there's nobody in the East better than, as far as I'm concerned, Toronto's number one. Cleveland, I don't know what they're doing. They need a coach. They're just ridiculous what they're doing. But Cleveland and Toronto are 1-2, 1A, 1B, and it's a fight for the other seeds. We could have had the three. We could have had the three spot tonight. We just couldn't kill an opponent that we've had no problem with, you know, the couple of nights ago.
Yeah, no, you're right. All right, Nick, thanks for the call. Appreciate the thoughts, and we'll talk to you later.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, Warren, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I understand his frustration. I understand even where he's coming from. And let me even clarify even what I said a little bit earlier. I'm not willing to trade this Brooklyn pick at all. I mean, unless it's,
right,
you know, whoever, DeMarcus Cousins, Kevin Love, or something like that. But that second pick, you know, I guess what would be our pick, that's potential. But there was a report earlier this week where they're talking about, I think H.R. Blakely had put out, yeah, he would trade the first pick for Danilo Gallinari. I mean, Brooklyn's pick for Gallinari. That's absurd. Like, that's absurd to me.
Right.
So I'm talking about, you don't trade that Brooklyn pick for anything right now, unless it is a bona fide franchise changer. Now, when you're talking about what our pick or what could potentially be Dallas's pick, and then that yields you an Al Horford, even though Horford is an expiring contract, he's not guaranteed to re-sign with us if we were to trade for him. Those are things I could potentially understand. But my protection or my hang-up is definitely on this year's number one pick or whatever, top three pick that would come from Brooklyn. And that's where I stand on that. But overall, you know, I definitely understand the frustration because, you know, you want to see this team improve. You want to see them get better immediately. You see the signs that they can. But again, it's just that you have to be very poignant. You have to be very careful with that and not necessarily rush into something, because think about this, you know, if the reports are true, and I guess we don't know if they 100% are, I don't know if Ainge actually confirmed them, but whatever he was offering this past summer for Justice Winslow, I think I would have dropped dead if that actually had come to pass. Now, I mean, is Justice Winslow the type of franchise type of player? I mean, is he going to turn into Jimmy Butler? Is he going to turn into Kawhi Leonard? I don't know, but I couldn't have seen giving up five potential picks for him, you know, to try to move up and draft in that position that Charlotte had right then. So I just feel like you have to be very, very careful and understand your assets and then make good use of them and see what teams are willing to pay when you're in that driver's seat, so to speak.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, because like Nick said, you have to. He said, I don't see how you can stand pat at the trade deadline, but I can, and obviously you can say that too. Well, because if you don't get the right thing, you don't want to be foolish and just make a quick rash decision and make a move that you might regret in the future just because you felt like you had to do something. And I don't agree with that. And I don't think we need to necessarily do anything, because it's just one tough loss in a game we probably should have won. But other than that, we're playing well. Clearly one of the better teams in the conference, especially at this point. As we said, I mean, Nick told us himself, we could have been a third spot if we won tonight. So obviously we're one of the better teams. So I don't see the reason why we have to make a move no matter what at the trade deadline.
Right. No, I agree. And like I said earlier, if it's not altering their franchise dramatically, you know, like I said, there's a real good possibility you can really improve again this coming summer. I mean, and make a drastic improvement with picks and potentially in free agency too with the cap room that's coming. I mean, I know everyone's going to have the cap room, but I just feel like that marked improvement along with a marketable coach and with a team that knows how to play the right way, that's definitely going to bring some attention to this franchise and to this roster. And I think some great things can happen. And said, I'm just not ready to sign off on the Celtics being a title contender this year. So you don't
right.
mortgage what could potentially be a title contending team in 2 years for something that's not necessarily going to come to fruition this season.
Right. No, exactly. I want to remind everyone, I know that no Garden Report tonight, because it's a road game, but we do have the Garden Report here on CLNS Radio for every home game. It's the best of written, spoken, and watched Boston sports coverage. For the best of audiovisual coverage, turn to CLNS Radio's YouTube channel at www.youtube.com/CLNSradio. Jared Weiss does high-definition locker room interviews, full-length locker room interviews, and the Garden Report, which is the HD post-game show, which is shot right in the parquet floor at the Garden. Make sure you subscribe to that. Also, the Grandstand Celtics Locker Room Report is what we usually get here for home games. It's sports highlights from fans in the stands. It's a new sports app, Grandstand. You can share your own Celtics highlights and watch other fans' videos straight from the crowd. So download Grandstand in the App Store or at grandstand.me. So we're going to wrap up here. Just a quick look ahead to the next couple of games. Want to get your predictions on the next, we'll say, two games here. The Celtics have the Knicks on Tuesday, and then the Pistons on Wednesday. He'll go three, and then the Cavs on Friday. So how do you see the next three games playing out? What do you think the Celtics record will be?
Well, a little worried. I don't think any of those games are easy. New York is playing very good basketball, and they played us well, you know, this season. But I think, you know, New York is obviously a winnable game. Detroit is another team that is winnable. They played us tough. We beat them in Detroit too. So I'd say probably 2-1. I'm not confident against, you know, playing Cleveland ever, simply because I just feel like they have so much talent, and they have really been a problem for us on the last two seasons. So I'd say this could be a very easy 2-1 week. Should be a 2-1 week, hopefully. Two winnable games versus New York and Detroit. But like I said, both those teams have beaten us already this year, so I guess you kind of never know what to expect. Where do you stand on it, man?
Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing. I think 2-1, I'm not sure which games they'll win, because maybe they'll squeak one out against Cleveland and lose to Detroit, say. I mean, you never know. So I'm not going to specifically say which game we'll lose, but I'm feeling good about 2-1. I think definitely a chance to beat all of them, and also a chance to lose to all of them, especially with two of the three of them being on the road. Yeah. But like I said earlier, the Celtics are one of the better road teams in the league, so that doesn't necessarily matter. But I think 2-1's fair. It'd be great if we could go 3-0. Obviously, I could expect anything, because each one of those games are winnable and losable games. So it'll be a good stretch to see if we can, you know, beat some of the teams that we've had trouble with, because like you said, lost to the Knicks earlier, lost to Detroit a couple times, and obviously we've had all kinds of trouble with Cleveland over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I agree, but it's a great test, as you say, great test, you know, against some of your Eastern Conference teams that are going to be battling and fighting for playoff positioning. I think New York is eventually may get into the battle for the eighth seed. I can't remember where exactly they are right now. But you definitely want to send a message, you know, put them kind of quote-unquote in their place. Always nice to beat the Knicks. And then, you know, definitely the Pistons are a team that you always have to, or that you have to worry about this season. And then again, you already know what Cleveland, where they stand. So, yeah, it should be a good test for them no matter what, and hopefully they come out ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. So look ahead for those games. Today's episode of CLNS Radio Celtics post-game show of the 119-114 loss to the Magic. It was powered by Lynda.com. Lynda.com is used by millions of people around the world. All their self-help courses are taught by experts, and new courses are added to the site every week. Claim your free trial membership to Lynda.com today by going to www.lynda.com/CLNS. Once again, it's been Jess Thomas and Warren Shaw. And if you want to get more of us, well, the two of us are hosting the next game show as well on Tuesday against the Knicks. So if you guys didn't get enough of us tonight, then you can tune right in on Tuesday night at 10 o'clock and call in at 347-215-7771. So look forward to that show again. Warren will do this once again.
Absolutely, man. Hope everybody enjoyed the show, and hopefully we'll be talking about a Celtics win on Tuesday evening. So make sure you join us, tune in, and we'll catch you on Tuesday night.
Absolutely. Hopefully it'll be a win. We can change the tone of the show. Obviously, tonight was a loss, so we'll hope for a win and hope everyone has a great couple nights, and we will see you again on Tuesday. Goodbye.